I'm Anne Strainchamps, and welcome to the Best of Our Knowledge. Today, we celebrate an American icon.
The greatest all-around athlete America has ever produced. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Thorpe, All-American.
Jim Thorpe was a Native American athlete who died 70 years ago and is still one of the greatest athletes who ever lived. Maybe the greatest. A legendary pro football player, Olympic gold medals for the U.S., and a Major League Baseball player.
I thought he was a hell of a ball player.
MLB coach Al Schacht.
He could hit a ball as far as anybody. He could run as good as anybody. He was one of the fastest men I ever saw on running the bases. He was fast. Man was a great athlete. He could do anything.
Former President Dwight D. Eisenhower actually played against Thorpe in college.
He can do everything that anybody else can do, and he can do it better. And we saw him, just without the slightest form, just put the football on his foot and kick it out 60 yards and punt. There's no trouble at all. We were standing back there, looked like the, 75 yards. You know, he just boom the ball, wasn't spiraling or anything else, just boom down there. That's all it was good. He could throw the ball, he could run, he could tackle, he could do anything.
He could do anything. Except outrun racism. As a Native American athlete, Jim Thorpe proved over and over again that he was better than anyone else in the world. Today, Jim Thorpe is having a moment.
He's important to me as a Native man and as a Native youth when I was growing up, just because that representation.
Tall Paul is an Anishinaabe and Oneida hip-hop artist enrolled on the Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota. And for him, Jim Thorpe was everything.
Born in Indian Territory, Oklahoma, with his twin brother Charlie just south of Belmont's border, in a one-room cabin with the wood stove aroma, not too long before the revolt.
As a kid, I didn't see Native men or Native women on the big screen too often, especially not in an athletic sense. Like, I was watching the NFL, the NBA, never seen any Native superstar athletes. So I got curious and started doing some research and found out about Jim Thorpe in my school library, and that inspired me hearing about him being an Olympic athlete and everything. Even though he's been gone at this point for a long time, I needed somebody to look up to who was Native. And that was important for me as a kid.
If you don't think Jim Thorpe is the greatest athlete of all time, you need to watch this video.
There's a feature-length film in the works. There's a new best-selling biography out.
The greatest athlete
in the
world.
One of the greatest athletes of all time.
Jim Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe. Just that much better than everybody else.
Wow.
He's popping up in Netflix documentaries and in Hulu's hit series Reservation Dogs.
It doesn't surprise me at all that there are Native kids running around with Jim Thorpe t-shirts on.
Patty Lowe directs the Center for Native American and Indigenous Research at Northwestern University, and she's a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe.
I think young Native kids finding somebody like Jim Thorpe are thinking, hey, I'd like to be able to do something like that and really distinguish myself in some awesome way and have people write songs and write books about me 70 years after my achievements. I think almost any person who follows sports knows the name Jim Thorpe and understands that his story is really part of a larger narrative about America and how we've come to deal with race relations.
So, who was Jim Thorpe? Where did he come from? How did he achieve what he did? Here's Shannon Henry Kleiber with Thorpe's biographer, David Marinus.
What originally drew you to Thorpe? I know you've obviously written about politicians and your sports biographies of Roberto Clemente and Vince Lombardi. What drew you to Jim Thorpe at this moment in time?
I'm always looking for the dramatic arc of a story, just a great story. And then for a way to illuminate history and sociology through that story. Jim Thorpe is both an incredible story of perhaps the greatest athlete ever someone who did things that were unparalleled. No one before had won gold medals in the decathlon and pentathlon, been an All-American football player, the first president of the National Football League, and a Major League Baseball player. And he was also, by the way, a great ballroom dancer and could play ice hockey, and people said he was even good at marbles. You know, he could do sort of anything. So that's part of it, but it was also most important to me was to be able to use his life as a lens looking at the Native American experience. Mm-hmm. And so it was that combination that drew me to Jim Thorpe.
Well, yeah, let's talk more about the Native American experience. The name of your book is Path Lit by Lightning, which is a translation of, how do you pronounce it? Is it Wathohuck?
Wathohuck, yes. Wathohuck. It's most commonly shortened to Bright Path, but I saw a translation of Path Lit by Lightning and I thought, that's illuminating.
Yeah. You know, that, it's was that
poetic.
Like a North Star for you, his name, as
yes,
you were working on this book?
Absolutely, it was, in so many different ways. He was born in 1887 in a little cabin near the North Canadian River in Oklahoma. The reason he got that name, I think, was literal. There was a thunderstorm along the North Canadian River the night that he and his, by the way, he was a twin, his twin brother Charlie and he were born. So that's where he got the name Path Lit by Lightning, Wathohuck. But I viewed it as both a description of this incredible, I mean, lightning reflects sort of energy and electricity. It also describes something that is dangerous in a way. And then the word path I like so much because the story of Jim's life is a path of great accomplishment, difficulties, and perseverance. His mother always told him that he was the reincarnation of Black Hawk, who was the greatest Sac and Fox warrior. And so Jim sort of always lived with that in his mind, that he was following the footsteps of Black Hawk.
By the time he was growing up, though, it was the 1890s, and Native people were living under white man's rules.
It was very oppressive.
Patty Lowe again.
The government had the right to tell you where you could live, the religions that you could participate in, and Native religions were not among them. Native governments were illegal. They had the power to tell parents where they could. They had to send their children. They could arbitrarily decide to send the children to boarding school. Every aspect of a Native person's life was controlled by the Commission on Indian Affairs, later the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which during this time was located in the War Department, which tells you something.
Jim Thorpe was among the Native children sent to those Indian boarding schools. He ran away from one, and then wound up at the most famous, the Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Its founder's motto was kill the Indian, save the man. The mission? To Americanize Native children through a military-style program of forced cultural assimilation. Carlisle's coach, Pop Warner, spotted Jim's athletic talent first in track and field, then on the football field and the baseball diamond. In those days, sports was one of the few paths to mainstream achievement even available to Native people.
You know, these athletic fields were the only place where Native people were free to express themselves, to compete against themselves, to compete against white men, some of them the sons and grandsons of the military leaders that had fought against those Native men's parents and grandparents. So imagine Jim Thorpe, whose great-grandfather, Black Hawk, was ruthlessly pursued by the American military, and now he's playing against teams from West Point. You know, I can't imagine what must have been going through his head. It must have been, he must have had some pretty interesting thoughts before those games.
Whatever fueled him, everyone who saw him agreed. Jim Thorpe was unstoppable.
Sometimes he would score all the points for his team because he was a running back, he was a kicker, he punted, he drop kicked 70-yard field goals. It's really, really remarkable what he was able to accomplish.
It is July 1912. King Gustav of Sweden officiates at the opening of the newly built Olympic Stadium in Stockholm. It is the sixth revival of the modern Olympic Games. It was the year Hannes Kolomainen of Finland won three gold medals in the 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, and cross country. But his achievement was surpassed by an American Indian, Jim Thorpe, who won the five-event pentathlon and then would attempt to win the first Olympic decathlon ever held.
Jim started training for the Olympics in the spring of 1912, just a few months before the games began. He'd always been a fast runner. But now he added jumps, hurdles, the shot put, pole vaulting, javelin, discus, hammer. He'd be competing in the five-event pentathlon and in the first-ever decathlon, the most grueling contest in Olympic history. He would win them both, outstripping every other competitor and despite an unexpected handicap.
So he's competing in Stockholm, and he's doing really well. I think it was the last day, and Thorpe was about to do the high jump, and his shoes are missing. Somebody may have taken them, or somebody walked off with them mistakenly, but he doesn't have any shoes. And so Pop Warner finds two mismatched shoes. They're not the right size, so he's got to adjust with a couple of extra socks on one and some jury-rigged cleats. And I think he had to wear two socks on his left foot. And he still performs and he winds up winning. That's a pretty extraordinary story, I think.
There's a photo from that day. It must have been taken shortly after he won. Jim is standing on the field, still in his track clothes, looking directly, almost challengingly, at the camera. You can see muscles clenched in his face. And on his feet, sure enough, two mismatched shoes. There's another moment from that day, also part of the Jim Thorpe legend, about the moment he stepped up to receive his two gold medals from the King of Sweden, David Marinus.
What transpired between Thorpe and King Gustav V during those 15 seconds would become a defining scene of Jim's life. The accepted story goes that the king greeted Thorpe in English by saying, "You, sir, are the greatest athlete in the world." To which Jim replied,
"Thanks, King."
Thanks, King.
Totally inappropriate to address a royal that way, but kind of endearing.
But the question arises, how is this conversation known to have happened? Was it a reasonable, if slightly imprecise, description of what was said, or was it myth?
That's the thing about iconic figures. It can be hard to separate the person from the myth. But how different is a myth, really, from a stereotype? In the press, Jim could be cast as both a heroic athlete and an ignorant rube, brave warrior, or quote-unquote, dumb Indian. The romantic myth and the derogatory stereotype wrapped together. He would be dogged by both throughout his career.
Some of the myths are small, you know, like the myth that Jim Thorpe hit home runs into three different states in one game, Arkansas, Texas, and Oklahoma while playing in Texarkana. It's a great story, but it's geographic impossibility. Mm-hmm. Throughout his life, he had to deal with people who romanticized and diminished him at the same time, people who helped him rise and then turned away from him at the times of his crisis. So I would say the largest myth I deal with is the myth that the white fathers know best.
The legend of Jim Thorpe was born in Stockholm. whose performance there catapulted him to superstardom. But the events that followed would haunt him for the rest of his life. He arrived back in the U.S. a hero, with a ticker tape parade down Broadway and national acclaim. 6 months later, the International Olympic Committee stripped him of his medals.
Could you tell that story a little bit? Because I don't think a lot of people know. I mean, they know he won gold medals in Stockholm, and they were taken away, but why?
Yes. Well, he played Bush League baseball for 2 summers in the Eastern Carolina League. This was in 1909 and 1910, 2 years before the Olympics. It was a period when literally hundreds of college athletes were playing summer baseball for money. Most of them were doing it under aliases. Dwight Eisenhower played in the Kansas State League under the name Wilson. There were so many aliases in the Eastern Carolina League that the joke was they called it the Pocahontas League because everyone was named John Smith. Or another line was, there are more aliases in the Eastern Carolina League than there are aliases for gunmen in New York City. But Jim Thorpe played under the name Jim Thorpe. He never hid it. His name was in the paper in North Carolina for 2 summers, almost every day. But nonetheless, after he won his gold medals, a story broke in the Worcester Telegram in Massachusetts, interviewing one of Thorpe's old coaches from the Eastern Carolina League. And it just broke into this huge scandal from there when the guy said that Jim Thorpe played for him. All of the people who were important to Jim's rise lied about their knowledge of what he was doing to save their own reputations. So Pop Warner, his coach at Carlisle, knew exactly what Thorpe had done. He had sent many of his players down to play baseball before. They were scouted by one of Warner's closest friends. Warner met with Jim several times during the period when he was playing baseball and not at Carlisle. And yet when the story broke, he said he didn't know anything about it. So these people, you know, sort of the white saviors, people who were promoting the purity of amateurism, lied about Thorpe to save their own reputations. George S. Patton was on that Olympic team. He was in the U.S. Army. He participated in the modern pentathlon, which had 5 events that were all military-oriented. And he was getting paid by the Army to practice that for a year before he went to the Olympics, but he wasn't called an amateur. The entire Swedish team was allowed to take off from their jobs for 6 months before the Olympics to just train and still paid full-time. They weren't. So in so many ways, Thorpe was victimized and let down by people around him.
Do you think that he was targeted? I mean, it just seems so many other people didn't have to play by those rules, but they wanted him to play
right
by those rules.
I don't know if he was targeted so much as he was victimized by it, because he was an easy scapegoat for everybody. So that when Pop Warner, for instance, when the scandal broke, Warner actually wrote a letter for Thorpe under Thorpe's name explaining what happened. And the basic defense was, well, he's just a, you know, low the poor Indian. He's just an ignorant native, which was wrong in every respect and insulting. So it was easy to have Jim take the fall.
But I think his story of accomplishing the impossible and then having it taken from you, as he did, distinguishing yourself at the Olympics, having your medals stripped from you for transgressions that nearly every major athlete was doing at that time in history. I think those are the kinds of injustices that really resonate with people.
It wasn't until the summer of 2022, after years of pressure from his family, that the International Olympics Committee finally restored Jim Thorpe's gold medals, 110 years after he won them.
I was happy for Thorpe's family, and I know that there were people in the Native American sports world that were finally satisfied that that had been returned. But, you know, for me, it was just a reminder of how injustice had worked for such a long time.
Sometimes the best form of resistance is remembering. Today, a younger generation of Native activists and artists are rediscovering the story of Jim Thorpe.
As I was writing this album, there were definitely moments of anger.
Take Topol.
Just thinking about all the stuff that Jim Thorpe had to go through, thinking about the boarding school history and how they started, and we had to get our hair chopped off, and we had to speak, look, dress, walk, talk like civilized white people, basically. Yeah, there was some anger there. And that's been the case throughout my whole life, learning about Native history, you know, not even just this album. So, yeah.
Topol is a hip-hop artist. Anishinaabe and Oneida enrolled on the Leech Lake Reservation in Minnesota. His new album is called The Story of Jim Thorpe.
I represent indigenous excellence, effortless, getting it in the kitchen, and I'm chefing this recipe. Rest in peace to ancestors that came before. If you're not aiming for the top, what you aiming for? Waging war since Columbus came on shore. Arrowhead to your head. Nowadays we just aim to four. What you waiting for? I blaze them all, I'm past hot. F you, f your team, f your mascot. Trash talk, talk trash, walk past, but don't look. I can tell by the vibes, I got them all shook. They wrote books but left the truth out. It's all lies. Next summer might bring the coop out. It's all lies on me, T-O-M-Y. And I been fly as equal threat. There's none better. Red poets representative. Word to talk poor. Fourth and goal, us against all y'all. All y'all.
It's indigenous excellence when we touch down.
Coming up, if what happened to Jim Thorpe during his life makes you angry, wait until you hear what happened after he died. It's a story you could not imagine. Not in a million years. I'm Ann Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRX.